Hello, this is Monocle Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin, and my guest today is Ellen Wiles. She's a novelist, anthropologist, and curator, as well as a creative writing lecturer at the University of Exeter. Her 2017 debut novel, The Invisible Crowd, was awarded the Victor Turner Prize in Ethnographic Writing and was a Guardian Book of the Year. Her latest book is Live Literature, the experience and cultural value of literary performance events from salons to festivals. Ellen, welcome to Monocle Reads.
Thank you very much.
Now, let's just start with a little bit of your background, because you've been a barrister and a musician. That's some way away from where you are now.
It is, yes. I've had an interdisciplinary background, or I'm a jack of all trades, you could say. Yeah, and I think having a background in music and also in advocacy as a barrister has probably shaped the way I think about literature and the relationship between the text and the voice and performance, and that all sort of fed into my approach to this new book on live literature.
No, absolutely, because you've got this wonderful kind of very clean analytical thought going on, and I guess that's the barrister side of you, but also the lovely rhythm that goes through the book, and I'm guessing that's music.
I think so, yeah. I'm really interested in rhythms and the sound of words and the sound of voices and the way that those all feed together to affect how we think about text and about books and about communication, really.
Mm. So this book, Live Literature, the experience and cultural value of literary performance events from salons to festivals, is absolutely fascinating, particularly to me because my other job is as a chair at literary events. And you're very much drilling down into what live literature is. How would you define it?
Well, I define it as events where literature in a broad sense is performed. And in this book, I'm particularly focusing on live in-person events. So what happens when people get in a physical space together, and that's become all the more, you know, heightened in importance and challenged in these pandemic times when suddenly all these live in-person events have had to change. And that all happened just as this book was about to come out. So it forced me to really think, you know, what is the difference between a live in-person event and a digital event, and how can we value them differently? But yeah, in terms of the scope of what live literature is, I mean, it's huge, and it's increased so much this century, you know, as literary festivals have boomed all over the world, but also other events. And I wanted to think about, you know, the importance of little events in bookshops and literary salons and all the different kinds of ways in which literature can be performed to audiences.
I mean, reading is such a solitary pastime. Why do you think that literary events have become so popular?
Wow, that's a really interesting question. I think there are a range of reasons. And partly, yeah, it is just a really lovely way of creating a sense of community. Authors really enjoy connecting with their readers. Publicists know that it's a way to sell copies of books. But you know, I was really interested in what more was there than that going on, because I think audiences don't just come to literary events just to be marketed at and to necessarily buy copies, although they often do. There's more going on there. And I think particularly in an age where there's just so much thrown at us online, we can access just any form of entertainment. There's Netflix, there are lots of events we can watch on YouTube. There's so much choice now in the digital format that events are a way to really focus on one author, one text, or a small group, and really experience that text and have a way into doing that in a community with others and to engage with it actively. And that's become increasingly important. You know, there's this idea that in the 20th century, it was an age of materialism where it was all about sort of acquiring objects, and that was a kind of marker of value. And now in the 20th century, when, you know, we have, certainly in Western societies, we have so many objects, and, you know, we're becoming conscious in a way that we have too much, really, that we're causing damage through that. And while there's so much more on offer digitally, the experiences become even more important, experiences that we can remember, that we can value, that can really shape the way that we see ourselves and the world, and they've become ever more important.
Mm. I mean, you really delve into literary festivals. You spend a lot of time at Hay Festival, and indeed in our current series of Meet the Writers, we're rebroadcasting some of the interviews that I did at Hay, and you ask some really interesting questions about this. So, for instance, the author now has to be more of a performer, and you talk about how sometimes that actually does influence the way books are written. Authors are writing writing with one eye on the fact that actually at some point they will have to perform this.
Yes, and often authors I spoke to felt quite conflicted about that. They were often, particularly the ones who were often called upon to perform a lot, you know, the big sellers, the big names, really try not to think about it, and they feel that somehow that might compromise the integrity of the book. But, you know, they do feel that at some point they're going to have to pick which is the bit that they're going to perform from at an event. And, it, you know, and they don't really like to admit that it might shape the way that they're writing, but admit that it has at least come into their mind. Although other writers, particularly David Armand, for instance, who's interesting as he's a children's writer. And I think in the world of children's writing, there is a lot more reading aloud and performance that's integral to the book. But he spoke so engagingly about how, for him, reading aloud and the rhythms of the words and the relationship with his voice and with performance is really integral to the way he thinks about what literature is all about, which is this sort of authentic storytelling connection between the writer and the audience.
I mean, there is always this dilemma, particularly as a chair, do you ask the writer to read or not? I mean, I have found some writers are really, really bad at reading their own work. And I wonder how much audiences want to hear that reading. And I know that you spoke to a lot of audience members. What was the consensus?
I found that in general, audiences really did value having a reading as part of it and felt a bit let down in the events where the readings didn't happen. There was an event that was packed out at Hay, for example, with Ishiguro, where, you know, everyone wanted to listen to what he had to say. And he's a brilliant interviewee. And I think everyone was hooked by that. But a couple that I spoke to afterwards said, oh, I just wish he'd read a bit from the book as well. I just wanted to get that insight into his relationship with the text. And I think one interesting thing that came out with conversations with audiences is that the ways that authors read their books aloud and perform them at events really can shape the way in which they understand the book. They can get a sense of the rhythms, the voices of the writer. Crucially, often the sense of humour comes through. And Colin Toybean said that about his performances, that he was really surprised once when he spoke to somebody in the audience. He said, oh, I thought your books were really serious, but when I heard you read them, I got your sense of humour. And it just sort of hadn't occurred to him that that would come through in that way and was quite pleasing. But for other audiences, they really talked about the rhythms of the writing and how that then shaped their reading experience. So often audience members would talk to me about how they would then go and read the book privately in their own spaces and silently, as we tend to read, but would then hear that voice of the author in their head. But as you suggest, you know, there are two sides to that coin, because some author performers are better at performing their work than others, and some can be really bad, and it can be sort of excruciating if you have a long reading. But I think that part of that is not necessarily the author's fault, because I think there's an expectation that, you know, if you've written a book, you will then get up and perform it. But it's not actually ever spoken about often as performance. It's spoken about as sort of a form of publicity. You get, you know, your publicist will say, right, I've lined up this event for you. You go and you have a chat and maybe read a bit. And that reading is not really emphasized, but it can be a really impactful moment for the audience, even if it's just a couple of minutes. It can really get them engaged with, you know, what the point of this is all about, which is the text, which is the story. Even if they're not sort of performing it in a really overt way, they just take care over how they deliver it, use a decent pace. Just these qualities that come into their tone of voice, just the author won't even be thinking about, like accent, you know, tone, rhythm, all of these things subtly do come through to audiences, and they really do appreciate that. I definitely found in my conversations that reader audiences always seem to want some degree of reading from the book.
And the other thing they want is the chance to ask their own questions. Now, I know, again, going back to my own experience as a chair, that's the bit that I dread, because there's either desperate silence, nobody asks a question, and it makes it very difficult then to plan a session. So you've got all these backup questions, but you want to ask them, but you know you're going to have to stop, and at what point do you bring those back in? And also, sometimes, of course, it's where do you get your ideas from, or some other dreadful question. But you've got a really moving story in the book about your own experience with that.
Oh, yes. So I start the book with a little prologue just describing my own experience of performing from my novel, The Invisible Crowd, at a small, lovely literary festival at the Gladstones Library. And there was a lady in the crowd who put up her hand to ask a question, and she sort of was very red-faced and very serious. And because my book is, you know, it's about immigration and asylum, and, you know, it's about issues that are quite politically sensitive. And I thought, oh, it looks as if she's really, you know, critical of the book, or maybe she really didn't like what I had to say about it, and I couldn't brace myself. But then it was actually that she was just really emotionally moved, as she was, you know, sort of crying, as she said that it really, you know, it really moved her. And I, that just really moved me, because I sort of hadn't realised that the book or the event would have that kind of effect on someone, which doesn't have happen very often. But it was a really, really lovely moment. And at Q&A, yeah, it is, you know, this is the sort of excruciating thing where you can get, well, this is more of a comment than a question, and some sort of strange ramble ensues. I mean, I've got that incident in the book, a hilarious one, where somebody, Gavin Extents, the novelist, told me about, where really somebody wanted to tell him all about this kebab shop that just happened to be in the novel was set. But, you know, there's a sort of nice serendipity to that too. You know, you get just get a sense of the huge, you know, infinite range of different ways in which every reader and every listener and every audience member at an event can interpret a book, and the ways in which, you know, one single novel can trigger so many different readings, so many different memories, ideas. So even those moments, as long as they don't go on too long, can add this sort of this sense of that something that's just happening in this moment, something really improvisatory, something unpredictable, something risky, something you could only really get in a live event where you get this random collection of people all together having a connection. And so, you know, there can be pleasure in that too. And a lot of people, reader audience members, said to me that often they don't feel like they want to ask a question themselves, but they just like the fact that they could ask a question and that they are part of this event where the potential is there, and they enjoy hearing other people asking their questions and having them answered.
Yes, because of course what these events really do is remove that barrier between a writer and their readers. It's a real way to interact with somebody whose words you've had on the page, but now you're seeing them, you can speak to them. And of course the signing cue is really important. You get your 2 minutes with them in person. And so I guess that's part of the joy of it, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, and I was really interested in that ritual of the book signing. And I think for a lot of people, you know, they are really, if they are inspired by the event and interested in it, they will want to buy the book. And among authors, and I think, you know, some in the publishing industry, there's some sort of amusement about why does it matter to people so much to sort of get the copy signed, and it, hey, you know, get these long queues of people snaking around for the big events. But there is this ritual aspect to it, you know, that builds on that connection you get in the bigger event, where you sort of, even if you do ask a question, you're still a slightly anonymous member of an audience at a distance. But if you want this connection to the author, you get the chance to have a one-on-one moment to say what the event meant to you, or what the book meant to you if you had already read it. And the signature then, that act of a one-on-one conversation and that physical connection of a signature on a book, then acts as this memory trigger that people take away. And then when they pick up the book, all the memories come flooding back of the event and of that interaction and of, you know, all of the other things around it. If you're at a festival, for example, you know, all of the memories of walking around a grassy field might come flooding back to you. So there's a lot more to the book signing ritual than just getting your autograph signed.
You know? Yeah. You also go into how the publishing industry is changing. I mean, Amazon obviously has had a huge effect, and how literary festivals and literary events basically are about a triangulation between the festival itself, the publishing industry, and the media, and how this all comes together. Because essentially, these events are about selling books.
They are, yeah, it's really important. And, you know, now Nielsen BookScan, which is the program that calculates all the sales statistics for the publishing industry, you know, has now special calculations for sales at literary festivals reflecting their importance. And they are really, really crucial places to sell books. And sell, you know, book sales are a measure to some extent of how people have engaged with the event and, you know, how successful it was. But what I wanted to focus on in this book is how it's not just a measure of success to look at the book sales. There's so much more to it than that. I mean, if an audience, for example, has a really deep connection with the event and with the author and with the text, that can linger for years to come and affect how they, you know, they might buy future books perhaps throughout their lifetime or the lifetime of an author. And that's very difficult, if not impossible, to measure. But it can also affect their sense of connection to literary culture more widely, which I think is so important for its, you know, its health, that people care and about books and they want to buy books from little indie bookshops and from other places, all these grassroots places that really make literary culture diverse and healthy.
No, absolutely. I mean, that is one big question you pose in the book. To what extent has live literature shaped literary culture?
Yes, and I think it's something that just hadn't been thought through very much, which is, you know, that I think they're often just seen as by the industry as publicity exercises, and very important publicity exercises. And now actually, because of the pandemic and because of, you know, suddenly all these events that have become really central to the publishing industry without people, you know, particularly thinking about it and talking about it that much, everyone suddenly, you know, having an understandable panic of, oh no, what do we do now? What do we lose when we don't have the big in-person events? And, you know, how do we return to them? How do we make them as good as they can be?
And so, I mean, how has the whole digitalization affected this, I'm going to call it, industry?
Yeah, I mean, there are brilliant aspects to it. You know, having streamed digital events means that there's accessibility opened up to international audiences, to audiences who might not be able to, say, for reasons of class or income, be able to afford to come to, you know, a big remote literary festival and pay for accommodation tickets. It's opened up access to people with disabilities who might not be able to travel or access a particular building. So, you know, that is wonderful. But yeah, the other side of it is that it doesn't create such a deep connection. There are so many things that you miss from a live event that you can't replicate on a screen. And interestingly, neuroscientists are doing some fascinating work about this, you know, not only looking at some brain scientists looking about how our brains respond to events that are in person, where somebody is, you know, speaking from a stage live, the emotional impact of that on our brains, and how, you know, previously we've been sort of thought to be these rational beings and we sort of take in information and process it, but actually these emotional qualities really affect how we then value and process information. Our mirror neurons are at work, sort of reflecting the delivery of the performer. And then there's this fascinating work showing that our hearts beat together as audience members even, and that there are all these other sort of physiological reactions, and all of those really shape, you know, not just what we take away in terms of information from the event, but how we feel about it, how we feel about each other, a sense of connection, a sense of community. Those things are hard to measure, but increasingly we're coming to realise that they really do matter.
It is a fantastic experience, I think, being part of that. How does one make it more diverse, though? Because you mentioned class, and quite often you look out on an audience and it is predominantly middle class, it's predominantly white, it's predominantly affluent. How can that change?
That's a really good question. I think a lot of literary festival programmers, you know, would love to have more diverse audiences, and it is a struggle. You know, usual suspects of the white middle class, slightly older audiences tend to come. And I think you can do such creative things with format and venues. There are things that you can change that can make literary events really different and really vibrant. One literary event that I looked at closely in the book is the Polari Literary Salon, which is an LGBTQ plus salon based in London. It was started by Paul Burston, a gay author, in a Soho gay bar as a small event, and the South Bank Centre took it on, and it's grown, and it's a really wonderful event. And what's interesting about it in terms of its format and its ethos is it's a sort of cabaret style performance, where Burston always sort of, you know, dresses up in quite glitzy outfits, and there are, you know, he's got this kind of this backdrop that's very dramatic. And then the format of the event is that he invites authors up onto the stage to do much longer readings actually from their work, so usually about 15 minutes, and there isn't a Q&A. There's more just his bit of banter with him in between each person, and then there's this long interval where you can have a drink and you're able to sort of go up and mingle and ask informal questions that way. And the really interesting thing about that is that it's a salon which was set up for the LGBTQ plus community, and it allows stories, that literary storytelling that engages in some way with that experience, to be shared with a bit more time and space in some depth, and allows audiences to connect emotionally with those stories and with each other through the sense of the performance, but without having to sort of engage on the nose with those often very emotional, sensitive, tense debates, you know, that would almost inevitably come up through Q&A, where people would sort of, as often happens in events, sort of end up talking about their own experiences, and, you know, perhaps conflicts between different perspectives might emerge. And actually not having that, and really allowing, encouraging a spirit of performance through the cabaret ethos, and you know, encouraging authors to really think about that, and, you know, performers as best they can, really take care of that, because that is the event, allows the literature to really speak for itself and to act this lovely way to create a sense of community between audience members and this sense of the rich variety and tapestry of stories that can be told about the LGBTQ plus experience. And so it really, you know, has this then activist almost impact for audiences, while also just inviting people to come in who wouldn't necessarily think that they would feel comfortable with a literary festival event. I mean, I spoke to one person there who said, you know, oh, I've never been to a literary festival, but I never would. I mean, I'm not a sort of Homer seating. I would feel excruciated by the sort of white middle class self-congratulatory atmosphere. And of course, you know, that's said by somebody who's never actually been to a literary festival, but there is that preconception there, which I think in itself, you know, to some people is a barrier. And actually just being creative with formats, you know, hosting events in interesting spaces can really attract different audiences. And in fact, while I was doing this research, I was living in London, and I became really interested in going to all of these really exciting live art events around the city in galleries and other spaces where often text and language, you know, and literature was an integral part of the event, but they were so much more performative and creative in how they were put together and programmed. And they felt so much more like a performance experience that I ended up, you know, creating a small project of my own to stage immersive short story performances in library and gallery spaces, bringing in other artists and art forms like dancers and live illustrators and actors and, you know, shadow puppetry, just to try and see what could be done, just to try and experiment with different formats and see who would come. And, you know, for that project, you know, we did get some much younger, more racially diverse, ethnically diverse audiences than you do often see at a conventional literary festival event.
Absolutely. So it is possible. And I would urge people who've never been to a literary festival or indeed a literary event not to prejudge, because, you know, the audience is only like that because you're not there. Come along and see. Ellen, it's been absolutely fascinating to talk to you. I do hope that we bump into each other somewhere on the festival circuit.
Absolutely. Me too.
Ellen Wiles there with Live Literature, the Experience and Cultural Value of Literary Performance Events from Salons to Festivals. You've been listening to Monocle Reads. Thanks to my producer, Nora Hull. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thanks for listening.